Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live from Trump Core Plaza, 10 miles above moon level at Intergalactic Planetary Studios. We tickle your appendix by keeping your comb over in place with inspiring ideologues spouting irreverent invective. This keeps your fiend bone inoculated from idiocy to keep the blue blood of Trumpism into your head. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? Is it twerking? Davi Barker and Diana Davidson.
Overcome the government. Woo!
And I am MK Lords. Freedom Fiends is covered by BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, I hear free speech is under attack in Canada.
Yeah,
Diana,
really,
can you tell us about this?
Interesting story. It's been going on for a couple of years now, and it's a case, they call it the Twitter case, and it's the first one that could have a real impact on freedom of speech on the internet. So it's got a couple of really bizarre elements, but right now the judge is writing his decision, and it's going to be announced on October 6th, so there's some time before we find out what's going to happen. But the case is kind of bizarre because the guy who's being charged, his name's Gregory Allen Elliott. He is, there's two women who've charged him with harassment, criminal harassment, so he could go to jail for 6 months. And he didn't actually tweet any threats to them. So it's a very serious case. And the officer who investigated has, they've gone through a bunch of examples of tweets and stuff. And he's mostly just being charged with being creepy and disagreeing with their political opinions. And do you guys read the case at all?
I've read the article. I haven't found the text of the tweets themselves. That's what I kind of want to hear.
Yeah, well, Christy Blatchford on National Post, she's been covering it for the last year or so. So I went through a couple of the bits that she did as various evidence was coming out. There was actually a big delay in the case at one point, too, because of the behavior of the main woman involved in this. Her name's Steph Guthrie. And so they're basically a bunch of feminist activists, very active in the Toronto political scene, and mostly using Twitter. And in fact, in this case, all of the alleged harassment took place on Twitter. Which
but they're
is
both from they're all from Toronto, so they all live in the same city, but they're still only communicating via Twitter.
Yeah, well, Guthrie and the accused, Gregory Elliott, they both live in Toronto, and he was a graphic designer and actually offered to design a poster for her. They've got some hashtag like T.O. Poly for Toronto politics, and she was starting a women in Toronto politics thing. And he offered to design a poster for them. She actually met with him in person. Nothing bizarre happened. This was a while ago. But they had a falling out because one of the things that Guthrie's really well known for is her pursuit. I think of it as a pursuit of this guy who lives in, I think it was Sault Ste. Marie. And he designed a video game where you could beat up Anita Sarkeesian. Right, so Anita Sarkeesian.
Right, because of Gamergate and all that jazz. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. For anyone who doesn't know, she's a big voice against sexism in gaming. She's connected to Gamergate, although Gamergate was originally about ethics and journalism. But it's really kind of usually when you hear her name, it's in connection.
It's a huge topic with lots of tangents. But needless to say,
most hated woman on the internet.
Her primary criticism seems to be against the damsel in distress trope, as I understand it. And so it sounds like this guy made a damsel in distress of her as a troll. Mm-hmm. Is that the idea?
Well, everybody was just so annoyed with with her interference in the industry. And I guess there's a few different people. There's a bunch of different names involved. But she was the main person in this, I think it's called Tropes or something like that.
She did a whole series on it.
Yeah, feminist frequency. Yeah. But yeah, she's the most vocal, I guess. And so people were just so annoyed by her that this guy designed a game where you could beat her up. And, I actually saw an image from it. It was pretty gross. Like, it wasn't just like two-dimensional color effects that would appear on her face.
I've seen
like,
that.
Yeah, it was pretty disturbing looking. But so Guthrie, she started a campaign on Twitter, said, let's make sure that he suffers in real life for this. And so they doxed him, and she contacted all his potential employers in his hometown. And this guy, Gregory Elliott, he had been sort of comrades with Guthrie up to that point, and he's like, look, I think this is a really terrible thing you're doing, right? I don't think this guy deserves that. And so then he started getting snarky with her and some of her buddies, to the point that she said, well, I'm blocking you on Twitter, and I don't want you to respond to any of my tweets. And she felt like he was following her Twitter feed and stuff, and he was making comments about her without using her at name. And there was some sort of name for the subversiveness of that. And so these are adults
doing this.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't help but feel like this is a playground or something.
Yeah, like this is some rather silly stuff. I know.
And then the recess bell rang, and they had to sit next to each other in history class, and it was so awkward.
So awkward.
Yeah, well, her behavior is less than stellar as well. They actually halted the case because the judge got a letter from somebody who was at a meeting that she held to organize the bunch of them getting together and charging Elliot with harassment, criminal harassment. So
doxing someone and calling for violence against them, not harassment, but commenting about someone on Twitter without tagging them, harassment.
Exactly. Yeah, the comparison, it really... When you start reading some of the tweets
So the judge just threw it out, right? Because he's a reasonably prudent person?
You would think so. I have my hopes up about this one. I think he's got to take his time to write it because it's potentially precedent setting. Yeah. And because it's a criminal case, not just a civil one, that, his judgment could be reviewed by the Supreme Court. So he doesn't want to be made to look foolish by making an error in wording or something.
Yeah. So the existence of the state encourages this litigious behavior, though. Like, when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And, if you have access to this giant Leviathan state who can do this to people, then I think it encourages people to go after people in petty ways. When if this was Libpear, for instance, maybe she could call his employers and they would have to make that judgment on his character themselves, without the state being involved. So this is a really bizarre, very childish thing to do. And I don't think people realize that when they're trying to bring the state against someone it's incredibly destructive. It's not just, it's no longer a baseless threat. It's, this is someone's livelihood and someone's life even being put in danger.
He's already lost his job.
It's no joke.
Right, he got fired as soon as he was charged. And they had
without any sort of review of the merit of the case or anything, the employer's just like, we don't want this drama, so.
Yeah, well, that's part of what Guthrie was doing, too, is being really vocal with, his employers. And I think they had some media coverage on it and everything, so.
So it sounds like this guy must have been at least somewhat aligned with them if he was with them at the beginning and he wasn't trolling them. So I kind of wonder where he is now, if he's like, these are the fruits which I wrought, right?
Yeah, well, Guthrie's, one of the things that she said on the stand was that she doesn't have a problem with vigilante-style justice, which is what, a lot of these Twitter campaigns are, right? And she said, when the law fails, right? She feels they're justified to take matters into their own hands.
Unless it fails the other way.
Yeah.
I guess.
That really, I don't know, it raises some questions for me in terms of, social justice warriors, that's essentially what Guthrie is, they very strongly believe in vigilante justice, right, which is not using the state police.
I mean, I kind of do, too. I mean, I think the internet outrage machine, while bad and can be, disruptive to certain individuals, I mean, I still don't view it as bad as being as bad as, things used to be with, actual lynch mobs coming after people and, physically attacking them. I think that if you're trolling on the internet, you can do whatever you want on the internet, but... sometimes crappy actions have crappy consequences. So seems like he was caught in the crosshairs of some stuff that, I mean, I don't know. I can't find any of his tweets to verify what exactly he was saying. I definitely disagree that, you know, anyone going to the state and filing charges over a Twitter beef is and probably insane, unstable person.
It kind of reminds me of a certain unnamed person who responded to a doxing that can't be verified with a DMCA takedown request.
Oh.
Like, doesn't it kind of sound like that? But anyway, yeah. Like, so is there some quirk of Canadian law that this has any merit? Like, it seems like this would just not go anywhere in any sort of rights-respecting society. Am I crazy?
Like, how do you be the judge and, like, not laugh at this? Like, immediately throw it out.
It sounded like he was pretty annoyed when he found out about the meeting and the planning and stuff behind the whole case, right? He definitely, like, he asked for a police investigation into the allegations. I'm not sure.
I'd be like, this is my life. I'm having to judge Twitter beefs, like, yeah, instead of...
The allegation is Twitter.
A big deal,
how much
though?
Police investigation does there need to be? Like, you go to their Twitter feed and you see what they said. Like,
well, this was an actual in-person meeting that took place, where they all got together at a bar or something like that. Right? The basis of it is that she feels like she was threatened. She claims that, even though she doesn't act like she was scared at all at any moment, she was
like
very
physically
confident.
Threatened.
Yeah, she claimed that she felt physically threatened. And the only thing that I could see that was tweeted that I read about, anyways, I'm sure I haven't read, you know, all the main things that, you know, from the trial, but these are just the ones featured in the National Post. But she was out at a bar with some friends, and they tweet prolifically, so they were tweeting about where they were at, and then I guess Elliot said something about there's a whole bunch of ugly going on down at this club. And that was all he said in his tweet, right? And then apparently she was so freaked out, she was looking around the bar to see if he was actually there. And so she's claiming that was the state she was in, was that she was constantly looking over her shoulder. And that
so
she
does
was
that
fearful.
Mean, so I know in some jurisdictions, sexual harassment, the standard is I felt harassed. I wonder if the standard in Canada is the same for physical harassment.
It is, yeah.
Well, I feel physically harassed by this woman. Right now.
Yeah, freedom of speech.
We'll have some more after this break, worms. Supposed to be saying something? Are you tracking me? This is the Freedom Fiends.
Have you been contacted by the government, Davi?
I've not been contacted by the government, but
good.
That doesn't mean they aren't listening. Which I should point out, they're not allowed to listen. We have a fiend fatwa, and we've interpreted, we've discovered a little known provision in the BIPCOT license, which shows that the government can't listen to the show. And the reason is because they're government bureaucrats, which means that the BIPCOT license precludes them from using the show. But see, if they listen to the show and then they remember it later, that's reuse. And so in order to protect us from the harassment of them thinking about the show in their mind, they really shouldn't be allowed to listen to the show at all.
Worms.
So I have
make sure they forget it.
Unless they have the Men in Black memory hole thing, that might be okay. But then they wouldn't know.
You need one of those devices.
So I have an experience from real life that is exactly like this, except it was. Well, no, it wasn't a real threat. So I tweeted, this was when Rand Paul made that sort of flippant statement about blowing up liquor stores with drones if somebody stole something. And do you remember this? He said, if somebody is running out of a liquor store and they've stolen something, I don't care whether it's a drone or a police officer that kills them.
Yeah. Perfectly reasonable statement.
Yeah. Obviously. And so I tweeted a link to this gaffe of his, and my comment in the tweet was, Rand Paul is dead to me. And this got picked up by a bunch of right-wingers who were saying, like, I can't believe you're threatening Rand Paul. I'm going to turn you into the authorities and whatever. And then they took screenshots and put it on their blogs and sent it out in their call to action, Patriot Web, whatever, Tea Party thing.
And, they weren't smart enough to dox you, basically.
Yeah. But the call to action was to, like, contact the, like, authorities and report me for making a actionable threat against Rand Paul on Twitter, to which I responded with a link to, like, an idiom database that explained what dead to me means. But, you know, I know how these right-wing groups work. They don't really understand the internet. They get a call to action that's been, like blind copied by 1,000 people in their email. And they're like, I guess I have to do this, you know, for America. And so I know somebody out of the thousands of people that saw this tweet or these blog posts had to have called the authorities and reported me for threatening Rand Paul on Twitter. But nothing came of it.
How do you think that phone call went down?
Anything more about it.
Can you imagine, like, being...
business, though. The more death.
Well, can you imagine being like the operator? Like, you're the person who answers a call at 911 and someone's like, someone was wrong on the internet. Like, what are they saying? Like, someone's threatening a politician on the internet. Like, what do you say to that? Like, okay.
I doubt it was a 911.
Well, I'll send
scenario.
Out the internet vigilante squad and
well, remember, the root word in vigilante tweeting. Is vigilant, and they say that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance, so there you go. The price of liberty is obviously eternal vigilantism.
That someone is wrong on the internet, though. That someone is wrong on the internet meme, it's so accurate. There's something about the internet.
It is.
When you have, you know, when you're in some sort of a especially political disagreement with somebody, it, like, prevents people from sleeping, you know?
Oh, it's an addiction, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
The need to correct people is an addiction for some people.
If you can...
And,
yeah.
I've had people on in the comments of my YouTube videos that will argue for months, right? And
yeah.
Even just, like, after the first few hours, one of them will state what time it is. You know, it's like 2 a.m. and I'm going to bed. And they can't just go and stop typing. They have to explain why they're not typing again for a while. So it's not that you won, right? I just have to sleep for a bit and then I'll be back.
Well, you know, you've, like, arrived in the internet when, like, somebody is making stupid comments on your content and there are other people responding for you, so you don't have to.
Yes.
So then you can just watch it for as long as it's entertaining, and then you kind of leave and turn off the notifications and, like, maybe check back next month and see if they're still arguing. But then, like, I really love that. It's like division of labor.
Well,
it's great. I'd much rather have other people argue for me than waste my time on it.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. It's outsourcing.
I actually get an email notification for every comment on all of my videos. And I still get notifications from the very first one. But I can only see, like, the first sentence or two, depending on the length of their sentences.
Yeah.
So it just gives me idea of the tone, right? But they go, like, months. People will still be arguing.
I have an early warning system for mass shootings that operates through comments on an old article. But I'll explain that when we get back from the break. Nice. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Site you can pick.
There you go. You want to explain maybe to the listener what they just walked in on? Because
we're back to bodily fluids here on the Freedom Fiends.
Always tepid?
Elevating the conversation level to a tasty and tepid. so we were talking about on the break things you can send in the mail to mess with people. And we talked about glitter bombs, and we talked about boxes of poop. These are all things you can go on the internet and find and send to people that you do not care for. And we were talking about this because Diana brought up that she received a strange letter in the mail recently.
Yeah, there was, like, a doxing event on a website that I was participating in, and I kind of think I'm of the responsibility mind with the internet. So whatever I say on the internet, I'm, you know, completely happy to be held responsible for it. And so I doxed myself. I put my home address, my phone number. I was like, there's no big deal, right? You are who you are. So I got a letter in the mail, and it just had a bunch of numbers on one side of the page. It came from the States. And on the other side, it had, in the center, just typed, "We are Legion." So this was an attempt to make me think that Anonymous was going to, you know, hack my life or something like that, right?
Wow. And,
or maybe they were.
So, well, I just figured they wouldn't use snail mail. You know, Anonymous is an internet organization. A little more high tech than that, so.
Yeah. I just turned it into an origami. So your videos get a lot of views.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I turned the letter into an origami pig and took a picture of it and put it on the internet.
That's yeah, you know, when you put stuff out on the internet, you know, you kind of open yourself up to criticism and stuff. So I get that. So your videos get a lot of views. And I'm trying to understand the MGTOW thing. Can you explain that to me?
Well, the MGTOW community, there's a few different factions. It's men going their own way. And I kind of, you know, they say it's like going galt, right? A little Atlas Shrugged mm-hmm. reference. But they're walking away, and mostly walking away from women. That's like, you know, when I
why?
First heard about
like,
it.
Why? Like, why do they want to do that?
It was, you know, referred to as the marriage strike. They don't usually call it MGTOW in the mainstream media. They call it the marriage strike. And actually, there's been books written about it. And a woman named Kay Heimowitz did a fairly well-known article talking about this Peter Pan syndrome, right? Which I found amusing, because she was saying, women are doing all the hard work. They're, you know, getting jobs and doing the shopping, and men are just staying at home playing video games like little boys, right? And saying that basically men were letting women down. And I was like, well, they don't owe women anything, right? Like, who are women to say? If men were to say that women should act a certain way, right, there'd be outrage. But apparently it's okay to say that men have to behave a certain way. And they were talking
about MGTOW. Yes, it depends on the subreddit you're on. So the MGTOW thing, I'm just trying to get like, why is it specific to men? Why, like, is there a humans going their own way movement? Cause I mean, like, it sounds like it could be gender non-specific.
Well, it's mostly a recognition that men are typically, the protectors and providers for women, that, they're, you know, they would be drafted for war, that in the family courts, the women get the children all the time and men get the bill, that women have reproductive rights, but men don't. If a woman gets pregnant, they have no say in it, and yet they're financially responsible for, you know, at least 18 years, right? And male suicide rates are incredibly high, and there's no attention. It was actually, there was a charity started to, what was it, Ride Don't Hide, it was called. And this guy actually started it to, he was riding your bike and raising money, to raise money for mental health. And that entire charity got co-opted. It was meant for mental health for both genders to start with. And feminists co-opted it. So now Ride Don't Hide, it only raises money for women's mental health. And yet men are the ones killing themselves more often. And shockingly, on the site promoting this charity, one of the people they featured, she was doing it because her brother killed himself, and then she became depressed, and now she had mental health issues. But the money was only being raised for her, not for her brother. Right? It's just really bizarre.
I guess I don't quite get.
Prostate cancer has finally got some attention with the Movember thing, right? But
I guess I don't get, like, because I've been, you know, trying to learn more about it and reading the different, I don't know, subreddits and different, you know, the literature on the different sites. And I guess I don't get the demonization of women as a whole. And I don't understand this from the radical feminists either. I don't get why the radical feminists and some of the radical MRA people want to demonize an entire half of the population for things that I've observed both genders doing.
Well, to a large extent, a lot of it is, and not to say that there isn't a segment who actually are in a really bad place, they're really hurt, and they are really angry, and they do believe that women are actually born evil, right? There is a segment that's like that, but overall, a lot of that talk is...
I've heard this rant before.
a lot of the talk is to balance the narrative, right? So right now, if there's a conflict between a man and a woman in public or anything, it's assumed that the man is the one who's initiated it. If there's domestic violence, it's assumed that the man is the one who was the cause of it. And actually, studies show that women initiate it more often than men. They just tend to get hurt more, right, because of the difference in size and strength, right? But there's, unfortunately, when you don't look at the reality, you're not going to help people who are living in domestic violence because you're only dealing with half the problem.
And well, so I pulled up some stats on the domestic violence thing because it interests me, and it does look like you know, more women suffer from domestic violence than men. Not to say that I mean, domestic violence is bad for anyone. No one should be hitting anyone. But it looks like women, you know, between the ages of 18 to 24, are the most commonly abused. It's saying 1 in 5 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner. But what's crazy to me, like when you get down to the homicide statistics, this is what kind of I thought was interesting. So 72% of all murder-suicides involved an intimate partner. 94% of the victims of these murder-suicides are female. So it looks like, I mean, I'm not saying, I'm not trying to downplay any type of violence that men go through, but it looks like women do disproportionately still suffer from this type of
definitely,
violence.
They definitely.
It sounds like you guys are saying
injured.
Different things. It sounds like one of you is saying initiating and one of you is saying like physically injured.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And definitely.
So like I've been in a relationship where a woman threw a lamp at me and I didn't hit her back or anything. So she initiated what would have been, well, nobody was injured, but it's domestic violence to throw objects at people. But nobody was injured and nothing was ever reported. Right.
Also what they count as, domestic violence is really catered to, male violence. And it's so annoying when you hear feminists talk about domestic violence, they actually,
well, wouldn't that be because people are injured? I mean, that's what it seems like to me.
Yeah. But that's the phrase, it just drives me nuts every time I hear it, male violence. They don't talk about people violence, you know, it's into feminists, it's not domestic violence anymore either, it's male violence.
And so you say feminism, but there's a lot of different schools of feminism, and I think it's kind of important to be specific about the types of feminists who are maybe making these claims. I've heard it from some of the radical feminists, but I don't hear it from like individualist feminists or dissident feminists. What are your thoughts on these other schools of thought? Because I don't know, like I think when it comes to feminism, and I hear it a lot on The Fiends and stuff, and I've been, you know, part of it too. I'm not an anti-feminist or a feminist, and I hear a lot of feminism bashing. And to me, that's a lot like saying that the loudest people in libertarianism represent libertarianism. And that's a little disingenuous to me, because just because they're the loudest voice in something doesn't mean that they represent that. I mean, feminism is a pretty big tent. It's actually much bigger than, you know, libertarianism, for example.
Yeah, but these are the ones I'm talking about are the legal feminists. So they're not like, you know, women going about their day thinking, yeah, I feel strong and powerful. These are the ones who are actually changing laws. Right. So in Canada,
we got to work with some definitions. Like I am totally ignorant of most of what you guys are saying. You're saying there's different kinds of feminism, including legal feminism and dissident feminism. And I think I heard some others. Can we define some of these? Because
I'm sure there's lots of listeners
that haven't either.
Legal feminists are the ones who are, you know, getting involved in changing laws in Canada. The ones that I was talking about with the male violence thing, those are the feminists who are running the domestic violence shelters, and they're quite, you know, active legally as well. There's one group that wants to get it so that women don't actually go to prison. Our battered women's defense laws here, they actually allow for women to legally murder. There's a professor, Elizabeth Sheedy, he wrote a book called Defending Battered Women on Trial. And she actually described the women who kill men as heroes. You know, it's
like, yeah, that sounds like radical.
She's a law professor at the University of Ottawa.
Well, so I've come out as in favor of vigilante justice. So I think that there might be cases where they are heroes who murder their husbands. But like, you can't say that as a blanket. This is always the case. Is that what she's saying?
Well, she had quite a wide variety of cases in her book. I went through each of the cases actually on my channel. And there was only one that was a really good, solid case. And even then, what I saw as part of the problem from the very beginning was that she, the woman, got into the relationship because of this promise that the guy was going to provide for her and take care of her and she wouldn't have to have a job. And as a result, she ended up trapped in the relationship because she, you know, had very little resources of her own. Right? And yeah, the guy was pretty brutal. He was trying to get her to kill herself so that he could get insurance money.
Whoa.
And then, wow.
Yeah, that was a pretty intense case. There's some really interesting stories. And then there's some really bizarre ones. There's a woman who was living with a guy for a long time. He used to take off and leave her alone. And there was some, like, you know, mental abuse and stuff that was, you know, definitely integral in their relationship. So he finally broke up with her and ended up living with this really young woman who he would bring around because the ex stayed at his mother's house. So anyways, she got really fed up with this and jealous of the woman. She got him to drive her to a pharmacy to pick up some medication under the premise that she was going to give it to him because he was sort of dealing drugs on the side. And then she shot him in the car, called a cab, went to his girlfriend's place, and tried to kill the girlfriend. I don't know how this young blonde thing survived this attack. It was brutal. She got shot through her hand and her head, and she ended up putting her fingers in the woman's eyes. The lady grabbed a knife, and when the gun jammed and tried to stab her, it was just an insane assault. And she thought that she shouldn't have been charged with that murder either. Attempted murder. Luckily, the woman survived.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of cases of men doing this kind of thing, too. I mean, stalking women and, you know, attacking them. And, I don't know that... I guess I don't see, like, a trend of more women murdering men than
no, she wants this up after the break.
She wants it to be legal.
Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And, we were talking feminism.
Yeah.
Which I apparently know very little about, because most of what I know about feminism I learned from comic books.
So,
you know, that sounds funny, but I want to point this out. Sam Keith has done a tremendous amount to teach teenage boys about feminism. And the way that he did it is that he put your stereotypical sort of, you know, busty heroine in his comic book, The Max. And then he, like, gave her self-esteem issues and made her sort of frumpy and fat sometimes and made her debate Paglia versus Steinem with her best friend in, like, 12 issues.
Oh, my goodness. That's great.
Paglia is a lot of fun, actually. I like her.
Yeah, I actually do like her. And, you know, and she identifies as a dissident feminist. She still has not, you know, given up that label. And, you know, I'm okay with that, too. I mean, Wendy McElroy is another, you know, feminist that I really like her perspective on things. She kind of comes from the individual thing. So let's define some of these things. Like, Davi was asking about some definitions. So I'm going to go with the broadest one, just the Wikipedia definition of feminism. I think this works just fine. Feminism is a range of movements and ideologies that share a common goal: to define, establish, and achieve equal political, economic, cultural, personal, and social rights for women. You know, so I think feminism is one of those things. It's a very big tent. It's a very broad movement. There are a lot of people, even within it, who disagree, who still identify as feminists. So you have, for example, you saw like a huge split during second wave feminism. So this would have been in the, you know, 70s or so, between like sex positive feminists and anti-pornography feminists. And this is where you saw a lot of like the radical man-hating rhetoric coming out. People like Catherine McKinnon and Andrea Dworkin, who were literally trying to pass laws to ban pornography because they viewed it as exploitative of women. And they were nutters. I totally
agree. Yeah, they said that all
like,
sex
agree.
Is rape.
Yes, they are complete nutters, and it's really unfortunate that they were seen as prominent figures and actually given, you know, a you know, a platform to speak on. But there were people, there were other feminists too, who were saying, you know, sex work is something that women choose to do, and they should have that right to choose that. And, you know, we're going to support that. We're not going to side with these people who are obviously crazy. So when we talk about feminism, I think it's important to define the schools that we're talking in, because there's first wave feminism, second wave feminism, third wave. There's even post feminism.
There are a lot of where they do feminism by taking their shirts off.
Right. Yeah. You have feminine.
So this sounds like there was
a lady that runs Femin. She was on a panel discussion with other feminists who were basically saying, "Yeah, you know, not cool. We're not too keen on what you do." And they started asking her about her understanding of feminism. And when she couldn't answer their questions anymore, she took her shirt off.
Hey, there you go.
At least she's consistent. So this sounds like libertarianism or sort of communism or any other ideology or broad movement. It's like there's a dilution problem in the vocabulary when your tent is too big, because like there's virtually no person in the world who wouldn't identify as a libertarian if you said it means you like freedom, right?
That's the problem with the dictionary definitions of feminism. You don't necessarily know what's being done under that name, right?
Right, but then there's always, because there's no central planner, there's always going to be radical elements that incentivize people like me to not want to use the term, because,
well, like in libertarianism,
what it comes down to quite often is the demand that the members of the group speak out against the radicals to show that they don't approve of it, right?
But then they're fighting a two-front war.
Yeah, I don't think anybody owes responsibility.
This is like the salon version of libertarianism, that they're all white misogynists that are, you know, following Stefan Molyneux or Lou Rockwell or something. And that's obviously not true. So you have to specify. You can be a minarchist, you can be an anarcho-capitalist, you could be there are a lot of different schools.
You could be Bill Maher.
You can be a socialist.
Libertarian socialist. Yeah.
We're going to have to come back with more of this in hour number two. So stay tuned through the break, and we'll trigger you where you itch.
Trigger warning.
Burns.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, FEENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Who's doing the intro? MK, do you have another intro?
Oh, sure. Freedom Fiends is back for hour two. We're still tickling your fiend bone, and I'm here with Davi Barker and Diana Davison. Also, I will mention Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Go to BIPCOT.org to learn more. And I guess we can keep talking about feminism. Where you guys feeling it?
Yeah, so something that I like am realizing, and it's interesting, this has never like clicked for me before, but there is like like I'm in when it comes to comic books, I gravitate toward psychological thrillers. I don't really gravitate toward like powerful superheroes. That's never really been my forte. I want a good writer with a good story, with good characters, and some psychological drama. So like Max is not really a superhero. He's kind of a bum who's a wash up in society and has to deal with his own mental problems. And The Walking Dead doesn't really involve any superheroes either. It's regular human beings trying to survive in a collapse scenario. And rape has been a common theme in both of these stories. And so your I forget this woman's name, the video game tropes woman, or
Anita Sarkeesian.
You're more like vocal, like rape culture feminists would say, we don't like these comic books. These comic books are awful, right? But like from my perspective, the writer is actually saying something about rape. Like most comic books don't deal with rape. They definitely deal with like the objectification of the female form to put on their covers to sell more comic books, but they don't deal with rape unless the writer is trying to say something about rape, and both of these comic books are. And so I feel like it's actually more of a like necessary part of the dialogue about it than it is exploiting women for the, you know, culture.
Well, the main complaint is that usually when that comes up, that the woman has to be rescued by one of the male characters. Right.
So, but it's not in neither of these. So the Max begins with Julie as the damsel in distress, and Max has to go and save her. And then they discover through the course of like reassembling the psyche of the world that Max is the damsel in distress. Not the damsel, but Max is the one who needs Julie's help. And it's about Julie becoming strong enough to help him. So it's the opposite. It reverses it.
Most of the complaints about stories are just coming from people who don't understand storytelling. They don't know how to tell. Like the Game of Thrones fiasco over the rape of Sansa Stark. I mean, that was done for, you know, very good reasons. And
they were very late in the game, I felt. There's a lot of rapes in Game of Thrones. So
yeah.
And some of them are male rapes. So it's not like they haven't been kind of fair-handed. But,
yeah. But if they don't go through any trauma, then the complaint is that the female characters are too shallow. Right.
Yeah. So I do take issue with the idea that, oh, because some writers, you know, portray characters going through these things, that we live in some kind of rape culture. I don't believe that at all. I think we should have very, very narrow definitions of rape, and anything broader than what rape actually is, you get into dangerous legal territory. But so there's a statistic that goes around 1 in 5 women have been raped. And let's say that, like, that's inaccurate. Let's say it's closer to like 1 in 10 women is raped. Yeah, so I was, you know, we were talking about these statistics here, and, you know, I think with statistics, you have to be extremely careful how they were reported and all of that. You know, I take issue with most statistics. But so there's this 1 in 5 number that's floating around that, you know, may be inaccurate in some way. So I was saying, you know, let's broaden it to like 1 in 10. Say 1 in 10 women have been raped in their lifetime. That's still a lot of rape going on. Like, that's still, I think, an unacceptable amount of rape going on. And I'm not saying that, like, I'm not saying as a culture we condone that, because we don't. Hey, Davi.
Sorry, I don't know what happened.
Yeah, we got kicked out. So what I was saying, Davi, is we were talking about the 1 in 5 statistic that may be incorrect. But
sure.
Let's broaden it. Say it's 1 in 10 women are raped. That's still an awful lot of women being raped. It's too many if it's one. I'm not saying as a culture we condone rape at all. We don't. But the police, having to deal with the police and the court system and all that is, you know, really terrible experience. And there's a lot of mishandling of rape kits as well. So this is a legitimate problem, I think. You know, I think it's a legitimate thing to be fighting against. There's just too dang much rape going on.
Well, we've got the hookup culture going on as well. And we've got the hypersexualization of women, and then we've got the demonization of male sexuality. And as I've said before, I'm very solution oriented, and I don't see what's happening as being very solution oriented, because you're basically increasing the power and the majesty of one sex over the other one, who are being turned into pretty much, you know, the devil. And that's going to create a lot more frustration, a lot more anxiety and animosity between the genders, that you know, the men going their own way, that's a direct result of feminism. that they're basically fed up with being raised to be told they're rapists and that they're terrible people.
But so here's the thing.
So like, I don't know that they were. I don't know why.
I've dated a lot of women, and I'm married, and like, I have not been called a rapist by anyone I've ever been with. So, like, it seems strange to me that they would say, we're going to throw off the female gender because some of them have these crazy ideas. I mean, like, I like women. It's probably my favorite gender. So,
well, it's a misconception of the community, though. There's only a small portion who are... like,
but it's the premise of the community. The premise of the community is men who are forsaking women.
Yeah.
No, they're forsaking marriage. That's the only thing that they have. Yeah.
Oh, so they date and they hook up and they have meaningful relationships and they're seeking love and affection and intimacy just like anyone else. They just don't make oaths.
Yeah, they don't make a commitment that makes them financially vulnerable, but also there's a number of MGTOW who are fairly high up in the community who do have relationships with women, and they're more like a friendship level relationship where they have their own agreements. They don't have any ownership over each other, and they live as completely independent people. I think it's a great model for relationships.
So what I don't get, though, you have a video, because I watched some of your videos, I find them really interesting, and one of them was called All Women Are Like That, and you make the case that all women kind of have in their nature this urge to manipulate men, based on some of the ways that they experience childhood and they play in childhood. And I found that a little confusing, because I don't really... I guess I'm just not seeing that at all. I'm not seeing how women largely manipulate men, and that, you know, all women have it in them to manipulate men. Because it's... could you kind of maybe elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, there is a little bit of hyperbole in some of the stuff I say, because part of my intention is to unrig the game by balancing the narrative so that I'm trying to draw attention to the reality that women are no better emotionally or in terms of compassion. They're no better than men. They're no worse than men, but they're no better. And you actually can't balance that narrative from what I've seen unless you, do the kind of thing that I'm doing, which is bringing attention to the extreme negative side. And we know that it's there. Like, look at the queen bees and the mean girl syndrome that goes on in high school. Women are not these saintly, angelic, little princesses that we like to believe that they are. So I'm really trying to raise awareness of that.
I guess I'm just not seeing the trend. Means we don't know, we don't think that, right?
So, but I think feminists have a point with some of the work that they've done to further our rights. I mean, I'm happy that I can get divorced relatively easily. I'm happy that I can own property and have a bank account. And they did make a lot of sacrifices. I want to talk a little bit about the Silent Sentinels. I'm just going to read briefly this Wikipedia entry here. These were suffragists who were imprisoned for basically asking for the right to vote and asking to be seen as equals in society. And on the night of November 14th, 1917, known as the Night of Terror, the superintendent of the Occoquan Workhouse, which was a prison, ordered nearly 40 guards to brutalize the suffragists. They beat Lucy Burns, chained her hands to the cell bars above her head, and left her out there for the night. They drew Dora Lewis into a dark cell and smashed her head against an iron bed, which knocked her out. Her cellmate, Alice Kosu, believed she was dead. She suffered a heart attack as a result, and guards grabbed, dragged, beat, choked, pinched, and kicked the other women. And newspapers ended up picking this up, and, you know, people were outraged and things like that. But these were women who were living in a very unequal time and were brutalized for just saying, hey, maybe treat us like human beings. And I'm not saying we live in that now. Things are much better for women, and I'm glad for that.
Campaign? Have you ever heard of the White Feather campaign?
Yes, it's shaming men for not going to work.
Yeah, that's right. That's what was going on in these times as well, that they would put a white feather on any man who wasn't off at war fighting.
Yeah, I want to reclaim it.
Where do I get a white feather? I'll just wear it.
Horrible.
Men should be proud to wear white feathers.
I agree.
Worms.
More leaders. Worms.
Someone called me a thought leader recently, and I was kind of offended. because I don't want to be a leader. And so I told them, I think what I am, I think what I am is a thought distributor.
There he goes.
That's a really great term. I like that.
I'm a thought aggregator.
Well, so, you know, I've got some thoughts, and you can have them if you want. And, you know, no need to follow them per se, but, you know, run them through the laboratory of your nervous system. And if you like them, you can use them.
That's kind of like on YouTube, right? You just, when you do a vlog, you just turn on a camera, which is actually a really weird thing to get used to, talking to a camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I still haven't.
I still had to, look at my viewfinder so that I felt like I was actually talking to a person. I should just get a big cardboard cutout or something. Anyways, so you just turn on your camera and you start talking and you have no idea if anybody's going to care, right? And then you end up, you know, with some channels becoming leaders in the community. Quite often it's charisma-based, and charisma can actually have a lot of toxic, you know, undertones to it as well. But there's some really incredible people. One of the first vlogs I ever heard about was an elderly man. He was in his 70s, and he just started, you know, uploading some of his ideas and experiences in life. And his channel was huge. It was like a viral channel. And he did a thank you thing. He was in tears. He just couldn't believe at his age that people cared about what he had to say. It was really beautiful.
Yeah,
I encourage anyone to. I guess it's kind of disappointing too if you make a bunch of videos and you don't get subscribers. But
see, that's how I feel. I feel like, you know, I don't make very many videos, but no, they're probably not very good either. Nobody should ever go to my channel. In fact, I don't know that anybody even knows where it is.
The most views I got on a video was actually being used by Russian propagandists to show how bad America was. So, like, it was great. It was this video. So I used to do work for this homeless outreach in Pensacola called Sean's Outpost, and they were fighting the county over this piece of land that they had purchased, and they were appointed a special magistrate, and she ended up siding with them on the case that the county was, you know, kind of abusing their power. And so there's this video of these county commissioners openly conspiring to fire her in this county commissioner meeting and being like, we don't like her, we don't like the way she's ruling, we need to find someone else who's more, you know, on our side with this whole thing, you know, shut down this homeless camp that these people are trying to make. Just like blatantly conspiring, just, you know, dirty deeds, like just right in front of the camera. They don't even care. They don't care down here is the thing. Like they can't be bothered to care about it. But it got like something like 190,000 views. And I found out that some Russian news service shared it. They were like anti-Ukraine resistance. So this was like during the time of like the kind of, you know, Ukraine resistance. And they were using it as propaganda to be like, look at how terrible the U.S. is. They just openly talk about conspiring to fire judges and appoint other ones that are going to, you know, so be more amenable to their interests.
A friend of mine did a video on whether or not you can rape a sex robot, right? So this was actually an article that he came across where feminists were having a debate on if sex robots became a thing, do they have they don't have the ability to say no. So, you know, are these sex robots being raped? And that
one, I, for one, welcome our sex robot overlords.
There's gotta be some definitional thing here, because like there's a very real sense in which a fleshlight is a sex robot. It's a very simple machine, but it's a machine. So are we presuming artificial intelligence in this scenario? Like they consent, but they just don't have the word no in their vocabulary, or
just think of all the vibrators. That's really funny, actually, thinking about vibrators. It's a thing in, I don't know, Detroit or something like that. No, we're at Portland, where they were, you know how shoes get thrown over phone lines?
Yeah.
People were tying dildos together and throwing them over a phone line.
Yeah, I saw some of those.
Would you say that's part of it?
The photos or whatever. So what's the verdict? Can you rape a sex robot?
Well, I'd say no, because otherwise women are like, raping them all over the world right now. There's like, how many vibrators are there? They're mostly it's mostly female oriented.
There are some that, like, there's just no way that's comfortable. Okay, like I look at them and I'm just like, that's, why does that exist? That can't be any fun. But I don't know.
Oh no, we're in danger of becoming a show about sex toys at the moment. Let's switch. Let's go somewhere new.
I'm okay with this.
I've seen some things that cannot be comfortable, that cannot be repeated on the air. But all I can say is to each their own. And, you know.
Worms.
Smoke them if you got them.
Make sure you get the consent signed form, form signed first.
Worms. You know, when he does announce, the headline should be Santorum Runs.
Oh, no. Yeah. Right, so what we were talking about dildos, right? So when we left there, speaking about dildos, you had a quote from Hillary Clinton.
Oh, God, my girl, Hillary. Okay, so free speech is being threatened in America, and there's this article by spikedonline.com called Even in America, You Can't Say That. And it's saying we need to defend free speech, whether it's Donald Trump saying his crazy stuff, or it's Jerry Seinfeld being like, hey, like, I can't do comedy anymore because people are too sensitive. So at the very end, Hillary Clinton has a response to this, and I think this is just like wonderful. This is just wonderful because she's saying, you know, we need to have this talk about race and discrimination and prejudice, but we can't have the likes of Donald Trump candidly expressing his hatred and prejudice. We should not accept it. And then this is the best. She says, you don't talk like that on talk radio. You don't talk like that on the kind of political campaigns. Obviously, she hasn't heard this talk radio show. Doesn't talk like Donald Trump? It's like, have you heard talk radio, lady? Like, I mean, Trump, like, the stuff that he's been saying is like, pretty mild. Like, it's pretty,
well, Donald Trump is a carnival barker. By definition, what he says is what people say. Like.
Yes, he is. I've heard people say the exact same things where I live, like, regularly. Like, I hear those kinds of things. Like, it's not even... Yeah, it's just, like, and casually, like, they don't even care. Like, they're just like oh, yeah, they just say it without any kind of... awareness of who they may be talking to, or like, I don't know. It's a weird place. But I love how she's like, you don't talk like that on the kind of political campaigns. It's like, what? Like, political campaigns are all about trash talking.
Yeah.
It's professional wrestling.
I would like to see Donald Trump host a beauty pageant for Secretary of State. I think that would be really funny.
I listened to a really interesting debate on a show. I think it was called The Agenda. It's a Canadian talk show. And they had this woman, Janice Fiamenko. She does lectures, actually, to do with men's rights quite often. And she got shut down. They pulled a fire alarm at one of her lectures. And they've also gone in and they've stomped their feet and yelled and made it so that nobody could hear her. She couldn't carry on with her lecture. So they had a debate on the show about free speech. And their response, the feminist response, was that it was their free speech to silence her free speech, which, you know, is a bit of a catch-22, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
silly.
I don't know how that's you against that.
The, you know, people who are adult age acting like children, again, when they don't get their way. And, I mean, I feel bad for these people because you're seeing a lot of this hyper-PC stuff at the college level, and... When these people get out into the real world, they're going to be really surprised by how much the real world doesn't care about their feelings. So, you know.
I'm into realism. I think that people need to learn how to adjust their reactions to things instead of demanding special treatment. The world is not a nice place.
You can't bubble wrap the world.
In small areas, you know, your own circles, the people you choose to spend time with. But overall, there's 7 billion people in the world. Come on, you're going to meet some jerks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to meet people who haven't gone through the same experiences as you, who are going to have wildly differing worldviews. And, you know, It's okay to have a dialogue with it. It's okay to be challenged on things that you already believed and that you were taught in college or even before college. I mean, college should be a place where you're challenged on what you believe. I don't know that it's really like that anymore, at least from what I've observed. I haven't been in college in a while, but it does seem like it's just getting very pushed in a radical...
Actually have trigger warnings on course material, so a student is mature enough to choose a course, but they're not mature enough to deal with the material of it without a trigger warning.
Which is so awful when it comes to people who actually can be triggered and have been triggered in the therapy to treat it, because if you're wanting to treat trauma and PTSD, it actually helps if you confront your triggers and if you work through them and you know, acknowledge those feelings and process through them. I've been triggered before. It's very uncomfortable. It's not a good feeling at all, but it's something that you can heal from. And if you stay in this victim mentality that society is oppressing you, or the men are oppressing you, or the women are oppressing you, or anything like that, then it's going to be really hard for you to break out of that and get that kind of self-empowerment that you need to be able to just deal with life. You know, it only gets harder, you know, like it doesn't, especially once you get out of college. I mean, you start dealing with some very adult level problems, and you can't throw a tantrum every time something doesn't go your way.
Well, and society is so infantilized too that we're supposed to, you know, pretty much read minds and be aware that anything we say, like at this point, anything you say could upset somebody, and we're supposed to create this utopian environment where nobody is ever offended. Well, you can't avoid offending people. How are you supposed to, you know, come up with great ideas and that's what universities are supposed to be for, dangerous thinking, right? People with those bold ideas that challenge people. And that's not what we have in university anymore. Now it's like babysitting.
Yeah. I mean, this is how we found out, you know, the earth was round. This is how we found out, you know, all of these radical discoveries throughout history that have pushed human progress in a positive direction were unpopular when they first came out a lot of times. You know, they did challenge the status quo.
Or illegal.
They shook things up. Or totally illegal, yeah.
My favorite videos are the ones with the most downvotes, actually. I was like, it's funny because the videos I've done, like I did one about Lacey Green challenging her ideas. Now, Lacey Green, she's not just a young girl doing a sex education show on YouTube. She's actually going around universities and setting policies that involve all men having to go to a course on how to not rape, basically, right? And pushing this yes means yes consent stuff in the universities. So she's not just a little girl who should be left alone. But I did a video on her, and it's got the most views. It was like 160,000.
You know, that's funny. I never took that class. I kind of just knew it.
Yeah.
I guess I tested
good
it
good on you, Davi.
Back in the good old days when men didn't need to be taught these things. But it's got like 5,000 upvotes and 5,000 downvotes on it. And I got the most subscribers. My subscriber count went through the roof with that video. So you would think I did a video with 5,000 downvotes, which normally only, like, you know, the normal video only gets maybe 30, right? Mm-hmm. That would have been really bad for my channel. It was the best thing that happened to it. So funny.
Well, no, this is why the internet is so great. You know, as much as these people want to suppress speech and stop people from doing this, I mean, you can't. Like, Pandora's been let out of the box, and you can try to legislate a lot of this stuff. I don't know that it's going to be super effective. And if it does, you know, if a lot of this stuff does get passed, then, I mean, obviously that's going to be really unfortunate, but you're never going to stop people from bullying people. You're never going to stop people from putting forth unpopular, uncomfortable ideas. It's just,
I think one of the travesties is another thing we're seeing with Jerry Seinfeld complaining that he can't, perform his comedy anymore because of all the political correctness, and Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle is, you know, mm-hmm. finding out that society's changed a lot since he went on his hiatus. And that's one of the things that helps people heal is laughter.
Yeah.
You know, there was actually a really interesting debate between a really clever comedian, actually, and Lindy West from Jezebel, where they did a live debate about whether or not rape jokes could be funny or whether they should be off limits, right? And, of course, the comedian was saying nothing should be off limits. And mm-hmm. he gave an example of Joan Rivers, And she had done a really great show, which was not too long after 9/11. And she made some jokes about
it. Yeah.
And everybody was actually so relieved. They actually laughed. And he goes, you know what? You know, just because she made that joke, it doesn't mean when you walk out from the club, none of it happened or that you don't care about it, right?
Yeah.
But the comedy is a way to let off steam and to actually, like, you know, learn to laugh. That's, I laugh at myself, you know, constantly all day long.
It's how I've survived some really dark things that have happened in my life is, you know, I love comedy and, you know, it's an outlet for me for, a lot of the stuff that I've dealt with, and it's been very therapeutic. And Joan Rivers, oh my God, like one of my idols, like she was just hilarious. And she went there. I mean, she did not care and she would not apologize. I mean, and maybe I didn't like all of her jokes. Maybe I didn't think they were all funny, but like I admired her putting people in that uncomfortable position and, you know, just being completely unapologetic about it. And, you know, it always really bothers me when I see people saying, oh, such and such should apologize for a joke. You should apologize for hurting my feelings, basically. And it's like, no. I mean, you could just, take a break from the internet or TV for a while if everything on there is offending you so much. I mean, yeah, maybe you just need to take a break.
Go on, time out.
Do it for yourself. Well,
I've listened to a number of comedians and didn't find them funny, not because they offended me. I just didn't find them funny, so yeah. I don't listen to them again.
Right. But yeah, and Dave Chappelle, too, is another example of someone who, one of my favorite comedians. We were talking about this earlier. It was like a recent interview, and he's recently started doing comedy more and getting out there more and finding out things have changed and people are more sensitive. And, I don't know if it's a general trend so much as people are more vocal because we have more outlets to be more vocal about it. I want to believe that like the offense level of people has stayed relatively the same. It's just we hear it amplified more because people have access to these mouthpieces now, whether it's through blogging or making videos or, you know, anything like that. So I think we're maybe just hearing more of it.
I don't think they're genuinely offended. I think there's been a huge disconnect between what offense means and this whole like professionally offended movement. Like I've been like professionally legit offended by things. And like, I don't react the way that they do. I don't hold on the way that they do. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it isn't the same emotion they're describing. Like they're describing like,
I call it the morality.
I think they mean offense, like a criminal offense, right? Like they think that this thing is a social faux pas and that's what they mean by offense. They don't really mean that they're like deeply hurt or anything.
I see it as a morality war, and it's a much easier war to win. You just have to embarrass people and threaten them with ostracization or like, you know, public shame, right? And it's a race to the bottom, as far as I'm concerned. It's a really, really bad approach to trying to so-called improve society.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
You know, there's that saying, hate the game, not the player. It really should be hate the game, not the gamer.
What?
No? I don't know.
I don't hate games or gamers.
That's true. I don't hate games. Except, well, I hate some games, but not like for personal reasons, just because they're boring.
I still can't believe how far they've come from the originals, you know, from the Atari games. I was looking at Asteroids. It's just like a triangle that moves around in a circle.
Yeah. It doesn't even have like a good smooth motion. It like blinks.
Yeah. It's actually not that easy a game. I watched somebody trying to play it, like a modern Let's Play thing, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, I used to be really good at this. He was blowing up the asteroids and the smaller bits were hitting him and stuff. Yeah. But it's so simple. It's just a triangle that moves around in a circle. Oh, you can jet it around, actually. I can't remember how you do that, but we had an Atari.
Probably the button. There's only one.
I like Q-Bert. Q-Bert was the best Atari game.
Oh, Q-Bert was awesome.
I know. But the graphics weren't quite as good as the drawing. I wish if they'd had better graphics, it would have been even better.
Yeah. I've been seduced by many of video game covers.
Well, I did a Gamergate video, but oh man, I do not want to get into that debate anymore. That I'm not a gamer, so I can stay out.
Yeah, that looks way too long. Didn't read, couldn't follow. I tried to, but no. But yeah, I mean, games. Yeah, now we have games where we can brutally beat up women, and that's something. But yeah, like, well, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do for redemption? Well, we gotta end on a positive note. We gotta empower people.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I find with YouTube. I love YouTube for that. That anybody can turn on their camera, they can start a channel. It's not that easy to promote it and stuff, but I've been doing mine for 2 years. It's done really well. But you know, I like to press buttons, get people thinking, and it's really exciting actually to see the response. And you know, I'm not going to stop offending people. And I look at the comments in my channel. It doesn't bother me a bit. You know, that's one of the big focuses coming up is, you know, harassment of women on the internet. Well, you know, guys get harassed too. It's like a friend of mine, he gets told all the time that he looks like Uncle Fester. Or, you know, like the insults are just as bad for men. And the point is that you choose what you read, you choose what you care about, and you shouldn't let anybody silence you. So
you also choose what you react to. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to react if somebody says something you don't like. Like, you can change
the
channel.
That's one of my policies. Yeah. I don't actually respond to anybody unless I've decided to.
Yeah. And, you know, you're not a victim just because you get your feelings hurt by something either. You know, this the victimhood mentality is just so destructive to self-esteem and human growth as a whole. And, you know, for both genders, you know, I'd like to see the genders working together on a lot of these issues instead of feeling like they have to choose a side or something. Because, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of work we can do as humans together that will further progress for everyone.
Yeah. Well, on the internet, basically, when people are trolling you, they try to decide what they think you care about, and then that's what they go after. So once you understand that, it makes it easier to one, hide what it is that might offend you. But you really just, if you go on the internet, you have to be ready to not be offended. This Twitter case that we started out with, she is a political activist who's very outspoken. And then she's claiming that she's like, you know, terrified by these small little non-threats. It's like, well, I think she's in the wrong business then, you know?
Yeah.
I actually can't believe the stuff that politicians put up with at election time. You hear it's bordering on slander. And when I hear that stuff, I think, you know, it's not just the guy. He's got a family, you know, or she does. They've got children in school listening to these, you know, radio announcements about their parents.
Yeah, well, they are kind of trying to rule over other people and dictate things. So, I mean, like, if you put yourself out on the internet, that's what's going to happen. If you run for office, that's what's going to happen.
That's so, ultimately the point.
Grow a pair and deal with it.
That's my policy.
Worms. Well, now that we've solved all the gender equality issues in the world, I think we should take on, I don't know, what, colonialism, reparations,
war,
racial
something.
Injustice.
I think we should colonize,
war, famine,
we should colonize
plague, death.
Mars or something.
Yeah, let's colonize Mars tomorrow. That sounds good.
Yeah, I'm in for that.
Worms.
Great show, guys.
Great show.
Thanks for coming. And you know, if you wanna upset a troll, just don't take the bait.
Yep.
Exactly. That annoys them more than anything.